gone last week. Last Sunday morning, I was down in Easton, Maryland, and down there with the church there. They send greetings and say hello and welcome. There was one lady, I forgot her name off the top of my head. She said, there's this one lady named Kay. I remember her. Can you tell her hi for me? So hi, Kay, from the lady whose name I can't remember right now. That's her. That's it. Thank you, Geraldine. Okay. Now I don't feel so bad because I committed it to memory all this week, and I said, I'm going to tell Kay when I said, and forgot. But we had a great time down there. My wife and kids, they went with me also. And being back here, I want to close out our series talking about deeper faith in God. And I want us to look at it from a perspective of not only what does faith mean, but personally, how do we go about living a life of faith? And when I say how do we go about living it, very often, and I know I'm speaking to some of the people in here who we've been following Jesus for a while. You know, I look out here and I see a lot of the same faces. I've been here 6 years. I see a lot of the same faces I've seen for 6 years. And from the very beginning, when we started this in January up till now, the question that really has to come into our mind is, has your faith grown since we started this series? Has your faith changed since we first started digging into looking in the Word and seeing the different men and women of God? Has your faith actually been moved? And how do you know? How would you know that your faith has grown? How do we measure that faith? Because, you know, when we think about it, when we go about our day-to-day lives, we do very often the exact same thing every day. And yet, how much has actually changed? For a lot of us, we show up every Sunday. We show up here, we show up to church, wherever our church home, our congregation is, or even if it's here. Many of you have been here for years. And the question has to be asked, why do you continue to come if your faith hasn't been moved? If your faith hasn't grown, if you haven't seen God in a deeper, more broad perspective, then why do we do and continue to keep doing the same things that we do? The title of the sermon today is Insanity. Insanity. I'll shed a little light on this. Insanity, I use this as a title. I was thinking of a couple of reasons, but one, we'll get into that in a second. But the idea of being insane, we look at people and we think, when you hear that term, insanity doesn't have a whole lot of positive things that come along with it. Nobody really associates being insane with good things. Now, there is a small exception to this. I was thinking of, you know, some of you might joke, I don't suffer from insanity. I enjoy every second of it, right? You know, some of you think, yeah, I'm crazy, but, you know, I'm okay with it. But on a more serious note, I was thinking of how this guy, his name is Sean, they call him Sean T, came up with this workout called Insanity. And it was made popular, number one, because it was something that you could do at home. You just watch the videos. You could order the disc or whatever, and you could watch this online. And it became very popular, not only because you could do it at home, but people were seeing results from it. Now, the reason why it was called Insanity is because most people do not work out this way. It was a constant cardio just driven, like you would go for 60 whole minutes, and it was just nonstop. And people, literally, their response to that was, that's insane. That's just crazy. Like, why would anybody want to do that? How can you do that without taking a break? But the results showed for a lot of people. And the reason why, going back to this whole being called insane, is because, and I see this all the time as a personal trainer, when I used to train people, you have people, you go into the gym, you go to Planet Fitness, Club Fitness, anywhere around here, and you see people, the YMCA, they show up. And they're there regularly, they're dutiful, they're faithful, they're there four, five, six times a week, same time every day, and they do the exact same thing. But nothing changes. And part of the reason why is because your body adapts. If you go out and say, I'm going to jog 2 miles every morning, the first month or two of that, you're going to see a lot of results. You're going to sweat a lot. Your body is going to, you know, lose, and you're going to get stronger. Your cardio is going to get better. But eventually, your body's going to adapt. Eventually, your body's going to find a comfort zone. We are creatures designed for comfort. And so what ends up happening is if you do the same thing, and let's say you do this for 6 months, you do it for a year, you've been doing it for 10 years, what's going to happen is you will maintain a certain level of conditioning and strength. It'll be healthy for you, but you will not grow. You won't increase. You won't get any better. That's why this insanity workout worked, because it completely shocks the system. When we think about our faith, so often we don't want to shock the system. We don't want to be uncomfortable. We don't want to do things that are new because it is, in fact, unknown. We don't always know what's going to come next. It's totally different. And days turn into weeks, turn into months, turn into years. And before you know it, years later, after saying, I'm going to follow Jesus, I'm going to be a Christian, I'm going to live the life of a disciple of Christ, and I'm going to follow him. Before you know it, months and years have gone by, and your faith hasn't changed. It hasn't moved anything. It hasn't developed for you. You haven't had an impact on anybody's life. You're doing the same thing now that you were doing 10 years ago, 20 years ago, maybe even 40, 50 years ago. This is Albert Einstein's definition of insanity: doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And we understand that, right? We understand. If I say, man, you know, I really want to, you know, get better, and I'm going to lose weight, right? But I'm going to keep eating the same thing? You think that's insanity. Because how can you ever expect to have different results when you're doing the exact same thing day after day after day? This is another one. I want to look at this passage in John chapter 5 that talks about this very notion of insanity. Because we can understand it when we look at it from the standpoint of our body changing or our lifestyle changes. But do we understand how our faith needs to be woken up? It needs to be shaken up. It, in fact, does need to be different. John chapter 5, we see an example here that I want to read starting in verse 1. Sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for one of the Jewish festivals. Now there in Jerusalem, near the Sheep Gate, a pool, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by five covered colonnades. Here, a great number of disabled people used to lie: the blind, the lame, the paralyzed. One who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, "Do you want to get well?" Other versions of this say, "Do you want to be made whole?" Some of you all have a Bible. If it has the little captions in the footnotes, and you'll notice there that there's a verse missing. We're going to come back to verse 4 and what's missing about it and why. Continuing on, it says, "Sir," the invalid replied, "I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I am trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me." Then Jesus said to him, "Get up, pick up your mat, and walk." At once the man was cured. He picked up his mat and walked. The day on which this took place was a Sabbath, and so the Jewish leaders said to the man who had been healed, "It is the Sabbath. The law forbids you to carry your mat." But he replied, "The man who made me well said to me, 'Pick up your mat and walk.'" So they asked him, "Who is this fellow who told you to pick it up and walk?" The man who was healed had no idea who it was, for Jesus had slipped away into the crowd that was there. Later, Jesus found him at the temple and said to him, "See, you are well again. Stop sinning, or something worse may happen to you." The man went away and told the Jewish leaders that it was Jesus who had made him well. Now, I want to take this and go in reverse here, because there's several things very interesting about faith in this passage. The first thing is, this man had been an invalid for 38 years, laying at the side of the pool, and it's the Sabbath, and the Jewish leaders see him walking, and the first thing that comes out of their mouth was not, "Wait a minute. You mean to tell me that's the guy that's been there for 38 years, and he's walking?" No, the first thing that comes out of their mouth is, "Don't you know it's the Sabbath? Don't you know it's the Sabbath? Why are you carrying your mat? The law forbids that." See, sometimes we can be focused on the wrong things. You know, we can lose sight of what's important when it comes to faith. It shows just how sick, frankly, and how warped the religious leaders at this time were, that they couldn't even see that this man, who had for almost four decades been laying there trying to get healed, is walking. All they saw was him breaking the law and carrying the mat. But going back to this guy, we see him, and Jesus says something very important to him, something that I want us to really think about. He says, "Do you want to be made well? Do you actually want this?" You know, verse 4, which I was just talking about, which is omitted in certain texts, certain translations of the Bible, it talks about this pool. And what it is, this pool would swirl around, and the people had faith, believing that if they got in this pool first, that they were the first ones to get in there, and like somehow they would be healed. They actually believed, they had faith in this. And so literally you would have people lining up, waiting for the pool to stir so that they could hurry up and get in. You know, so imagine that you're a person who's not particularly fleet of foot. You know, maybe you have a tough time getting in front of the line. Well, this is what's happening to this guy. For 38 years, obviously he needs help. And he says, "Jesus, I can't get healed because I've got this limitation. I can't walk. I can't get in there. I need somebody to help me, and not only do I need him to help me, I need him to be willing to help me get in there first." Well, guess what? Everybody else who's there is there for the same reason as him. So, of course, nobody was actually willing to help him. And so we find this dilemma where this guy is participating in what we might call insanity. He's doing the exact same thing every day. He's coming up to this pool and he's waiting, but he can't seem to get in to be healed. And Jesus asked him a very simple question. He didn't say, "Would you like me to help you get in? You know, I have the power, you know, I can do these amazing things. I can make sure we brush everybody back. That way nobody else can get close, and then we can take as long as we need to. We'll get you in there. We'll just roll you on in." Jesus didn't say, "Well, how about we, you know, gather up some of the quickest and the strongest men here and let them attend to you?" He asked him something, and it wasn't the logistics of actually getting in the pool. He says, "Do you want to be well? Do you want to be whole? Do you want to be complete?" He's saying, this is a decision that you have to make, because doing the same thing is not working for you. Having the same attitude and participating in the same activities is not working for you. Do you really want this? You might even think to yourself, if I was doing something, forget 38 years, if I was doing something for 8 years and it wasn't working, you would think, try something different. Do something different. Look for another opportunity. Negotiate some kind of deal. Figure out something, because this isn't different. But for 38 years, he kept doing the same thing. I find it interesting that it was almost four decades, because there's a lot of us. When we think about our faith, and that's why I asked the question in the beginning, has your faith actually increased? Has it grown in the past couple of months? But maybe even in the past couple of years. Has your faith grown to a place where your life has been changed, where it has impacted others? If not, we have to ask ourselves, are we engaging in insanity? Because we show up here every Sunday. We show up to Bible study. We pray in the morning. We pray at evening. We pray all day long. We read our Bibles. We do the same things. But what is changing? We understand that faith is not just belief and some mental understanding of God and creation and the universe. But we understand that faith is about action. How have your actions changed? What are you doing differently as a result of God working in your life? If you're not doing anything differently, then the question has to be asked, how different are we if we don't change? If we're not willing to do something different. Notice the other thing is, the guy, he's sitting here at the pool, and he's saying, no one will help me. And Jesus' response to him was, not only you have to make a decision whether or not you really want this, but he didn't put it on other people. Sometimes we feel like, well, if somebody would just help me, if somebody would just attend to me, if somebody else, and we look at other people and what they're not doing, well, if the church were just a little bit better, well, maybe if it were a little younger, maybe if it was a little more diverse, maybe if we just had a better preacher. I know nobody's saying that, but I'm saying there's all these, well, if something else will be different, if somebody else will be different, then I would be able to do these things. And God is looking us squarely at this moment in our face and saying, no, this is a decision that you have to make. You have to decide whether or not you want it, whether or not this is something you really want, or are you just going to keep doing the same thing over and over again with no result. We must have a willingness to be different and not choose comfort over faith in him. And I use that term comfort because very often we can look at this man at the pool sitting there and we can think, well, how can he be comfortable? He's an invalid. Well, it's comfortable because he doesn't actually have to do anything different. Very often we'll stay in a place of comfort because what faith requires is something that is very different from comfort. What faith requires is that you confront something that you didn't want to confront. We look at this man, and we notice the interaction that he had after he gets up and he walks. He now has to confront the church establishment and the teachers of the law and these people in religious authority. He has to do something uncomfortable. Anybody in here ever been called out for your religious beliefs? It's uncomfortable. Anybody ever mock you for what you believe? Anybody ever look at you and think, there's that religious person who they're always praying, they're always, you know, trying to be peaceful. And see, sometimes that can be uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable to forgive people who've hurt us and haven't even asked for forgiveness. They haven't even made it. They haven't offered an apology. They don't even think they did anything wrong. It can be very uncomfortable to forgive that person. And yet, because of our unwillingness to be different, our unwillingness to give up a sin, our unwillingness, our willingness to compromise, because of that, we're stuck in the same place. We think, I want to help others know who Christ is. I want to share my faith. I want to bring people to him. But I'm not willing to get up and carry my mat. I'm not willing to walk through. Now, and we talk about the religious establishment and the Pharisees and the teachers of the law. But even here, some of the things that require us to get up means I've got to be willing to do something, even if the people here at the Dover Church of Christ don't necessarily understand what God has called me to do. I'm willing to do it. I'm willing to confront this thing. I'm willing to say this thing. I'm willing to speak. I'm willing to lead in a certain capacity. I'm willing to do this even though it's uncomfortable. Because the alternative is, in fact, insanity. The alternative to getting up and walking in faith means you'll be here next Sunday and the following Sunday and every other Sunday that you wake up, because you understand it's your responsibility and your duty. You'll be here, but will your faith be different? Will you bring somebody with you? Are you willing to do something different to save your wife, your husband, or your daughter, or your son, or your brother, or your sister, or your coworker, or your neighbor? Are you willing to do something different when you know that the things you've been doing year after year have not worked? You know, many of us know this. This is Proverbs chapter 3. I'll read it to you. It says, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding." Many of us have memorized this. We know this. And yet, in crunch time, when it matters the most, this is exactly what we do. We lean on our own understanding, not even realizing that that's not faith. Faith says, like we talked about a few weeks ago, faith says, I'm actually participating in my relationship with God. I'm participating in an activity that requires me to suspend belief because I have faith in a God who is not bound by the laws of this world. But do we really trust his understanding? Is that really where our faith is? This one says, the three C's in life: choices, chances, changes. You must make a choice to take a chance or your life will never change. You must make a choice to change your life, to change or your life will never change. It's not just the logistics and the structure and all these things around us that have to change. Sometimes the decision to change and how things are going to change in your life come down to you making a choice. I'm going to be different. I'm not just going to get up in the morning and pray for 10 minutes and read a couple verses and where. No, I'm actually going to do something radical. Like, I'm going to start doing, a Bible talk, Bible study in my home. I'm not just going to pray for or even sometimes gather people together and pray with them. I'm actually going to sit down and study the Bible with my family and my friends. I'm willing to call someone out and say, no, you can't live like this and expect to see God. But it's a choice that we have to make to do something entirely different than what we've always done, or we will always be the same. Life is a matter of choices, and every choice you make makes you. We are a collection of choices that we make. And if we make the same choice every day, we will become more of what we are, more of the same. This, and I shared about this on Friday. I was at a hospital up in Wilmington. I'm talking about Harriet Tubman. And I've talked about her in the past before. The Underground Railroad ran right through Delaware. She's from Maryland. And it fits right in, not only because it's Black History Month, but it fits right in because we think about choices. For those who don't know, Harriet Tubman had to make a lot of choices. But it's not just that she had to make choices that were tough and difficult and went against the grain, but she made a lot of choices that she had to make for herself, and she made them alone. She made them at great risk. This is one of her in her older life. This is actually a picture of her. I believe it was around the time when she was actually in the Army during the Civil War. One of the things about Harriet Tubman is she's actually the first woman to lead a combat unit in battle in American history. took an all-black regiment, and they went in several times. She led them into combat. What was so amazing about it was that in all of her combat missions, in addition to all the times when she went across the line to go into the Confederacy territory to bring slaves back to the Union side, and even before that, when she was still a slave and she was going back and forth from Maryland through Delaware into Pennsylvania, says she never lost anyone. Never lost a single person in all of her trips. Now keep in mind, this is a black female during the time of slavery. She suffered from narcolepsy. She was hit in the head with, they believe it was a horseshoe, some really large metal object. Slave owner, he's trying to throw it at some guy, misses him, hits her in the head. She was a teenager. I think they said she was about 12 or 13 years old. And as a result, she had very deep sleeping spells that came with narcolepsy, but also she had terrible headaches. But her motto was, we keep going, we keep moving on. You know, you hear the dogs, you hear the guns, you hear the noises, you get tired, you get cold, your feet hurt, whatever it is, you keep on going. She did this understanding that her husband at the time, when she was a slave, her husband had his freedom, but did not want to risk his own freedom for her to be free, and felt it better for her to remain a slave. Think about the decisions that you have to make when you say, I'm going to run for freedom, and now that I have crossed into Pennsylvania, I'm in free territory, I am safe, I can keep going to Canada, but instead I'm going to go back. See, that's different. That's what makes her stand out. She did something different. What are we willing to do different in our faith? If this church is going to grow, if your own personal ministry is going to grow, what are you going to do that's different? Or are you going to keep on showing up to the pool? You're going to keep on showing up to church. You're going to keep showing up to prayer time and our Bible study. Are you going to keep showing up? But what's going to be different about how you leave here today? Life is about choices. Some we regret, some we're proud of, some will haunt us forever. The message, we are what we choose to be. You can choose to be an example for everybody in here and everybody around you. Or you can go back to work and go back to your home and go back to wherever you're from and be the exact same. That is a choice. Because if you put the faith in God to be different, He will reward your faith. We see this throughout the scriptures. All the things we've studied, we see examples of God rewarding people's faith. It's not our skills, it's not our talent, it's not our ability, it's our faith and the choice to live by faith rather than by sight. This one is one of my favorites. You have to decide what your highest priorities are and have the courage, pleasantly smiling and non-apologetically, to say no to other things. And the way to do that is by having a bigger yes burning inside. Very often we look at life based on what could go wrong. What are the risks? What might happen? What might not work? Instead of seeing it through the eyes of faith and say, but how is God going to use this and bless this thing? Last scripture I'm going to look at here very quickly is Mark chapter 6, starting in verse 1. It says, Jesus left there and went to his hometown accompanied by his disciples. When the Sabbath came, he began to teach in the synagogue. And many who heard him were amazed. Where did this man get these things? They asked. What's this wisdom that has been given him? What are these remarkable miracles he is performing? Isn't this the carpenter? Isn't this Mary's son and the brother of James, Joseph, Judas, and Simon? Aren't his sisters here with us? And they took offense at him. Jesus said to them, a prophet is not without honor except in his hometown, among his relatives, and in his own home. He could not do any miracles there except lay his hands on a few sick people and heal them. He was amazed at their lack of faith. I wanted to close it out on this passage because so often we look at faith and we can kind of forget so much these people saw. They even said, who gave them all this wisdom? Where is all this power coming from? How is this happening? And yet they still did not believe. Jesus didn't suddenly run out of, you know, battery life and need to recharge. He didn't suddenly run out of miracles. He didn't suddenly run out of amazing. It was their lack of faith. There are still people out there that need to know who Christ is. They need to see who Jesus really is. There are still people who are lost. There are still ways in which God can use us to be an example of Christ in the world. But do we have enough faith, or are we limiting God's power because of our disbelief? The power of God is not in limited supply. It's our faith that needs to grow, or in some cases, be renewed. Because let's face it, everybody in here, everybody's not in the same place. Some of us used to have faith, and we've managed to lose it. Have you lost faith? Are we able to see just how disappointed God is? Not that he's angry with us or he somehow hates us. No, he wants us to have faith so that he can work through us. But it requires us to do something different than what we've always done. A few questions I want to end up with here. Number one, what part of my relationship with God is waiting on me to get out of the insanity loop? What part of my relationship with God is simply waiting on me to say, you know what, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. I'm sick and tired of doing the same thing. I'm sick and tired of just, you know, every day is just, you know, how do I get this bill paid? Or how do I get from work to home? How do I manage to, you know, what am I going to fix for dinner? Instead of having faith that says, when I wake up in the morning, I'm not just looking at everything I've got to do that day, but I'm looking and saying, God, what are you going to put in front of me today? Whose life am I going to be able to impact today? How are you going to change my life today? Instead of just going through the same old, the insanity trap that so many of us have. Because some of us are going to come back here next Sunday, and the question is not going to be, well, hey, how you doing, and how are things going, and, you know, how's your dog, and, you know, all those kind of things. The question is, has your faith increased? Has your faith changed since I last saw you last Sunday or last Wednesday or whenever it was? How do we get out of that insanity loop? Second question. In what area of my life have I been waiting on others to help me get off the mat when I need to be focused on Christ? I've asked the question in this way because I want us to really think about it. So often what limits our faith is we think we don't have enough around. We don't have enough support. I don't have enough friends. My family, they don't really encourage me spiritually. They're not helping me to grow. They're not thinking about Jesus. Sometimes I feel like a man on an island, a man alone, or a woman all by myself. I got people in my house, people in my job, people all around me at all times. But when it comes to my relationship with God, I feel like I'm isolated and alone, and there's nobody to help me. And we're just like this man. It's not a matter of logistically, is there going to be somebody to help pick you up? The question really is, do you want to be complete? Do you want to be well? Are you willing to do something different? Jesus empowered this man to get up, just like he empowers us to be different. Do we actually want to be made well? Do we want to be able to have the impact that God empowers us and deputizes us to do in this world? How many of us have been waiting for somebody to help us get off the mat when Jesus has been saying the whole time, actually, you need to get up off the mat so that you can help others, so that you can be the one to help them get up the right way through faith? Do I really want to be made whole in life? Have I settled for being a victim because of decades of disappointment? Am I willing to get up and walk? You know, I put that word victim in there because sometimes we look at our life, and let's face it, some of us have had harder lives than others. And even if we don't call ourselves victims, even if we don't limit ourselves in that way, subconsciously we feel like we are incapable. We know God's there. We know he loves us in some kind of way. But we don't feel like we can do anything but be victims. That we're subject to everything that goes on around us. We are limited by our circumstances. We're limited by our money. We're limited by our health. We're limited by the abuse that we endured. We're limited by some of the bad things that happened even in the church many years ago. Things that are debilitating. And what God is saying to us is, through faith, these things don't have to be debilitating. You can get up and walk, and then you can be like this man who then goes and tells the teachers of the law, you've been doing it wrong. I don't have to be held down by bitterness and hurt and anger and setbacks. That's one of the things I shared when I was up at the hospital on Friday. The question I said was, how is your story going to end? This man laid on the mat for 38 years, but he got up. His story didn't end on the mat. How is your story going to end? What will be said in the obituary on your tombstone? What is it going to say? Is it going to say, well, you know, they had a really good heart, but they never really got up? That thing that knocked them down, it kept them down? Or is it going to say, this person was down for months, years? They kept going to church and nothing really changed. They never really grew. And then one day, they were 70-something years old. They were 80-something years old. And one day, they got up. And they began to share their faith with people. They began to believe in the power of prayer. They began to teach others. They began to live a life free and happy, knowing that this is not the end for them because they have hope in eternity with God, and they live like it. How is your story going to end? What will be said about your story? Jesus tells him, he says, hey, I see that you're better. Now move forward and don't keep sinning. That's always a challenge for us. We have to get up and then move on into that new life instead of accepting being victims. And finally, what choice can I make today going forward that will change both how I see God and the lives of others around me? What choice can I make today? Because, you know, very often we'll have really troubled lives or different things that are setbacks in our life, and they're really big, and we don't know exactly how we're going to get out of that thing that might take us months and years or even decades to heal from or get out of or fix. But there's something you can walk away from here today and choose. You may have 10 things in the back of your mind right now, think, yeah, I need to get rid of all those things. I need to do something about all those things. Well, choose one today. What is the one thing you've decided, I'm not going to leave out of here without making a decision? I'm going to have faith in this area of my life. I'm going to pray more, and I'm actually going to believe that God is listening and that God is talking to me, and that I'm praying to not just some abstract thing, some abstract being, but a God who loves me. Maybe it's, I'm going to make a decision that, you know what? I've always said, yeah, I don't feel confident enough to be a teacher or to really do anything hands-on in the ministry because I just don't know the word of God that well. And for years you said, I just don't really know the Bible that well. I don't feel confident. What? Maybe that decision is, I'm going to get confident. I'm going to do the research. I'm going to take a class. I'm going to study. I'm going to become competent to teach on something because there are so many people out there that need it. Maybe that decision is, you know what, I've been coming to church and I have an understanding of who God is, but I've never really given my whole heart to him. I've never really committed that I'm going to follow him. I've never made the decision to be one of Christ's disciples. What is the decision that you need to make today? As a church, we are committed to helping one another, praying for one another, teaching one another. If you're in one of those places and you like the prayers of the church, in a minute here we're going to stand up saying we ask you to come forward and ask for the prayers of the church. If you're someone who's never given your life to God, you've never made a commitment to follow Christ, you've never been baptized, you never repented of your sinful lifestyle and said, I want to be made whole. I want to know where my future lies. Come forward. Let us help you get to that place. As a church, let us help you find out what you need to do to be made whole in him so that you can be a real Christian. Maybe you're somebody who you once had that type of faith, but you've given up. And you've been laying on the mat too long. And you just need prayer to get up. Don't wait. Don't worry about what others think. Let this be a moment where you say, you know what? I need the prayers. I know that the prayer of the righteous are powerful and effective. I need that prayer because I don't want to leave here and come back here the next time we meet. And nothing has changed about my faith. If you're in any of those places you'd like to have the prayers of the church, please come forward as we stand and sing our song.